Well, let's start with you again on this one, Justice Rose. What can a practitioner do that's most likely to make you receptive to his or her arguments in a brief as early as possible?
I think probably showing that your briefing and your case itself is focused on your strongest points. I mean, I think a lot of times we get briefs that it's hard to leave a point on the table, but you're really well served if you can pick your 2, 3, 4 if you have to, very best points, and go with those and focus on them. Put them up front in your argument. Use the table of contents as a way to give sort of an outline of what the brief is going to tell us. I know a lot of times when we open a brief, I'll generally flip right to the table of contents to see, you know, generally what is the case about. And if it goes ahead and has some substance and reads like an outline of your argument in the case, all the better. But I think to the extent you can focus that, sort of the same thing with regard to names and people and characters and facts, and especially if you're the lawyer that tried the case and you now have it on appeal, I know you get attached to what happened at trial, but to the extent that you can narrow down those facts and only give the Court of Appeals the facts that are relevant to your points on appeal, I find that really, really helps. A lot of times, I know we all want to comprehend everything we read, and if you read 2 or 3 pages of a brief and you've got 9 names listed, you're making little notes going, okay, Bill and Joe Bob and Sally Sue, and then you get to the end of the brief, you're like, well, Sally Sue never did anything. Why would she? You know, so if you can sort of compress the facts, I think that helps a lot.
One thing I do in that regard is if one of the people in the statement of facts didn't really have much of a function in the case, I call them by their employment rather than, you know,
Absolutely. The
clerk, the police officer, whatever. That's a signal to you that they're insignificant.
Right, and we try to do that in opinions as well if we can.
That's a great idea. So one of the things that, and I very much agree with all of those comments, and I think a helpful table of contents is a great way to start a brief, and that you should be able to tell basically what the whole brief is about from the table of contents. I do like sentence headings that are persuasive and, you know, so that you're marching through the argument and you can tell exactly what it's about. Also, putting your issues presented in the table of contents is great, so that it's all there in one place. And then you've also got a separate page, of course, or section of the brief that's for the issues. But if you reproduce them there under the issues presented section of the table of contents, it's just a one-stop shopping for the judge to kind of figure out what the case is about. Another thing that I suggest is, you know, the rules don't really say that anything about there's not a separate section for an introduction, but it can often be helpful, I think, at the beginning of a brief, and instead of waiting until the summary of argument, which comes after the facts, just to do a short introduction to kind of orient the court to, you know, what are the main issues you're going to be raising, what should we be looking for in reading through the statement of facts. That way we're not flipping around trying to find that information later in the brief and then trying to come back to your statement of facts. One of the legal writing professors that I really respect talked about it as giving the court a container so that they have something to put the information in that you're about to give them about the facts and can understand why those are relevant even before they get to the argument section of the brief, so that we don't have to, you know, read the argument section before the facts, and you know, that may be unhelpful. And if we're reading the facts before the argument without that introduction, we may not know how they all fit in, and then we have to go back. So just giving that kind of container so that the judges understand the relevance of the information as soon as they see it leaves you in control of how you want the judge to read your brief. So I find that very helpful.
Well, if you do like headings, do you want them in the table of contents?
Yes.
I think that's a helpful way to track it.
Okay.
And then one thing that helps as well, and maybe we don't see it as much in criminal cases as civil, but sometimes you'll have two sides that just you can tell they're like ships passing in the night, and their issues presented and their headings and topic areas don't match up. And so that leaves the court trying to match those up. I think in criminal law, it's probably a little bit less likely that happen. But it really helps if you can couch your arguments in terms of, if you're the appellee, you know, if you can couch your argument in terms of the issues the appellant has raised in the way that they've phrased them, even if you don't agree that that's the correct issue, if you can at least keep those buckets the same, it helps the court a lot follow the arguments.
And if you can, and there's no need to reproduce, in that, I agree with that very much, but there's no need if you're the appellee to reprint your, the appellant's issue on appeal. You're just giving your adversary extra time there if you're putting their argument in your brief. I mean, you can say, you know, responsive to issue one or whatever it is, but put it the way you want to put it. You don't have to reprint the other side's arguments in your brief.
That's another point people often ask is, should I go ahead and if I'm the appellee, should I restate the facts? And, you know, I don't think you should regurgitate the entire facts, but if you miss the opportunity to put the facts in the light that favors your case, you're missing an opportunity. And so if it is a case where either the appellant has misstated the facts or twisted them to their benefit, and if you want to try to get the court back into viewing the facts in your way, that's a good opportunity.
One thing another appellate judge told me was the state does not have to have a statement of facts, but if you leave it out, you're sending the judge back to your opponent's brief if they need to look up something factual. So always do it. What I do is, as a prosecutor, is I do reproduce the point of error, the appellant's point of error, but then I have a response to it of the same length, just a heading, and put those in the table of contents so you can immediately see what the issues are going to be.
That's good practice.
And sometimes I get a brief and I open it and it says point of error 1, point of error 2, point of error 3, and you don't actually see the points of error until like page 5 or 6, and it's very disconcerting because you don't know what you're dealing with.
Another thing, just in practice and the way judges operate a lot of times, that's really helpful to have, because we may have a case and we've got, you know, 70 cases on the docket, and we want to pick one or two of them up and have a staff attorney assigned and start working through them. And if you can sit down with the staff attorney and have the ability to look at the table of contents to get a sense of, okay, these are going to be the issues in that case, kind of this is where it's going, and at least have a reasonable conversation without having read the entire brief yet, it's really helpful.
Okay. Justice Rose, do you see any particular problems in criminal filings in particular?